Let me in. Shiba chiba. I want to be closer to you. Shiba chiba. Open up your soul. Shiba chiba. Let me find that part of you. The part that nobody ever knew.
Let me touch your.
Hello and welcome to Let Me Touch Your Mind, the show where we try to get you to be something, do something, experience something, enjoy something. And the guest that I have for you today has created a lot of things for you to enjoy. He's got a very impressive resume and has made Hollywood and made acting more open and available for actors of color everywhere. I'd like to welcome the shapely and talented Robert Townsend. Hello.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me and dedicating that last Barbara Morrison song to me. I am that man.
Are you the coal man? So before we get into the show that you're going to be doing around here, I want to talk about the start of your career. First of all, when did you get bit with the acting bug?
You know what? I started when I was, I talk about it in my show, but I started when I was 10 years old because I grew up in a rough neighborhood and I would watch television and I watched so much, you know, they nicknamed me TV Guide.
Okay.
So that, it started there. And, and like when they talk about your 10,000 hours, Malcolm Gladwell, my 10,000 hours started, you know, because I lived in a rough neighborhood and my mother was afraid that I was going to get recruited by one of the gangs.
Sure.
So I started watching television, doing impersonations and stuff. And then I joined this theater at the age of 14 called X-Bag, Experimental Black Actors Guild. And that's kind of where it started. And then I, you know, did my first movie, Cooley High, which is a classic film.
Yeah.
I had two lines in that.
Uh-huh.
I was an extra in Mahogany with Billy Dee and Diana Ross. And so it started there, and then, you know, but I was a baby. I started as a little kid
just loving
show business, just loving it all. And then, you know, now I've been writing, directing, producing for some 40 years now.
So when you joined this theater company, did your mom, like, heave a sigh of relief? Or did she think, oh, no, baby, you need to get, like what was it like in your house when your mom, when you were like, I'm in this theater company now?
Well, let me say this. when I was a little kid, I'd be in the bathroom because, you know, it was my mother was a single parent at a certain point, and it was four, you know, it was four of us, and my room was the bathroom, and so I'd be in the bathroom just doing voices and having shows, and they all thought I was crazy. They're like, he's in there again talking. And I'd be like, you know, doing French voice. And I'd be doing all these voices.
That's good.
And they're like, he's crazy. And so when I found theater, my mother was like, this is where you belong.
She's like, oh, I get it now.
And she was patient and, you know, because you never know who your kids are going to be and what they're going to be.
Right.
It's like my youngest daughter right now, Skye Townsend, is, you know, acting and she's a regular on the neighborhood with Cedric the Entertainer. And I'm beyond proud of her. And she's got that thing where she loves it and wants it. And so my mother did the same with me, encouraged me, you know, to go to embrace my artistic side.
And she must have been relieved that you were in something that kept you out of trouble.
Yeah, well, you know, I never, when I saw the gangs on the streets, that wasn't exciting to me.
No.
You know, I was like, I don't understand why you're going to rob somebody or beat up somebody. And, you know, I was very, you know, because I watched so much television, I was like, there's a whole world out here, and I'm not going to go to jail for nobody. And so I didn't, it wasn't attractive to me because I was always like, that don't make sense. It doesn't make sense. It's like with that, it's like, you know, in my film Meteor Man, you know, I have a whole scene about the community coming together. And I was like, why can't the community come together and get these gangs off the street and get the drug dealers out of there, you know, but everybody's afraid.
Right.
So for me, it wasn't sexy. So I was like, eh, you know, I love acting. I love playing.
Then acting, in her mind, was then it keeps you out of harm's way.
Yes.
Like you had a place to go, you know, that kept you away from everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was experiencing things that, you know, like in my neighborhood, when somebody got a car, they just bought a car and then they would drive around the block in the car mm-hmm. with the top down and their friends. And I was like going, why don't y'all drive
somewhere?
You know, so it's like some of my friends have never left the block that we grew up in on Chicago,
wow.
you know, which is scary because they were, you know, afraid of what's out there because
wow.
of the mentality.
Wow. That is sad. That's very, yeah, that's
disheartening. No, when I lived in New York, one of my best friends, he didn't come to visit me because he said, if anything jumped off, I wouldn't know what alley to run down. And
aww.
I was like, what? You know, you know, and it's like growing up in the hood, man, growing up in the hood.
Wow. Wow. So then let's move forward. So you've done this, you're part of this theater company. And then what was the first thing that you did where you felt like, I'm a professional actor now? Because everybody has something. Like,
I guess it was, as a kid, I was having such an amazing life. Like I said, you know, I did Cooley High, I did Mahogany, I was doing TV commercials, I was studying at Second City mm-hmm. with Joe Forsberg, who was Bill Murray's improv teacher. So I was just having a ball, and I'm a young actor, and I was making great money. The TV commercials paid well,
mm-hmm.
so it was really good. And then when I went to Illinois State University, that's when I had a bit of a dilemma, because there was a teacher that was from New York that really talked negative to me about my dreams and everything.
Oh.
And then that's when I left and headed to New York because of that teacher.
And what sort of things did they say, and how did you get back on track?
Well, she told me I wasn't going to make it. This is in the show. And basically, you know, when you're a young person,
mm-hmm.
you know, I am at that time 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I'm at Illinois State University. And you're impressionable. You know, you think I can do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I felt, and that's what I've been doing for my entire career. But when I said it to the teacher, like, here's my dreams, this is what I want to do. And she says, you can't do that. You're not going to do that. You don't have what it takes.
Ooh.
And I was devastated for 3 hours. And then I thought about it, and I was like, she doesn't know me.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and a lot of people say negative things, and they don't live their dreams.
Mm-hmm. I saw this thing with, I forget his name. It's another comedian, and he was talking about people who say negative stuff to you and how they say that to you thinking that they're helping you. They're, you know, they're not trying to crush your dreams. It's that they can't see it. It's not – you can see it, but they can't see it, and you can't let that interfere with your dream. So how did you, so you said, this isn't going to affect me. So what did you do? And also, did you ever do you think about her every time you have a success?
No, you know, here's the thing. If I saw her today, I would give her the biggest hug, because if she hadn't have challenged me that day,
mm-hmm. 'cause
soon as she challenged me, I call my mother right away and I say, I got to get out of here. I want to find a school in New York, because if I'm going to chase my dream and go after my dream, I need to be in New York.
Mm.
And she was the catalyst. I wouldn't be in show business now if it wasn't for that woman, you know, because a lot of my friends in the theater and arts, none of them left. They just stayed in Chicago, and they were the biggest fish in Chicago. And I wanted more of the world. And so, I would give her the biggest hug, because sometimes, you know, like the rappers say, you know, your haters are your motivators.
Right.
And she motivated me. And I called my mother. My mother says, okay, baby, if you want to go. And I transferred to William Patterson College in Patterson, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going into New York on the weekends, you know, studying and working. And, you know, so in the show, this is all in the show, my journey. Because, you know, sometimes people have dreams.
Yeah.
And like my grandmother in Hollywood Shuffle, my grandmother was the hater, and that's how she was in real life. You know, when my mother was working at the post office, my grandmother would cook, and then, you know, she says, you want to be an actor? What you know about acting? Ain't nobody in our family ever been in acting, and, you know, how you going to do that? You don't know. You need to get a job at the post office, and that's what's in Hollywood Shuffle. And I would, I would eat, because she was cooking dinner,
uh-huh.
and I would just eat the food, and as she was listening, I never disrespected her. I just let it go through one ear and out the other, because I said, I know what's in me, you know. And so, you know, and a lot of young artists, older artists, you can be successful at any age.
Uh-huh.
You just got to believe. A lot of people, you know, because there's people around them, and they're, like you said, they're trying to protect you, but not really. It's just like, if, like with my kids, whatever they mm-hmm. want to do, I want them to be happy. At the end of the day, are you happy? Rather than like, I've got a really great job, Dad, and I hate it, you know? It's like, well, what do you love? Because for my entire life, all I've done is write, direct, produce movies and television shows. And I love what I do. Like right now, I'm working with Damon Wayans.
Uh-huh.
There's a new series that he has on CBS called Papa's House. I'm directing Papa's House. Then I'm also a professor at USC, tenured. And so I love working with my students. One of my students just won the DGA, one of the DGA awards for Student of the Year. And that's my mentee. So, you know, it's just touching different things, and I love it all.
Okay. So what was the first, like after you went to New York, what was the first show that you did where you felt, you really felt like, okay, I am moving in the direction of my dreams?
I did a movie, you know, I was living in New York, but then Keenan Ivory Wayans, who is my best friend, Keenan says, Robert, you got to get to L.A. That's where everything is. And so when I got to L.A., you know, he came back. This is funny. He came back. He says, Rob, I believe in it, man. You know, like, you don't want to leave New York. I'll come back there and get you. We'll put your stuff in the U-Haul and we'll drive across country. And I was like, really? And he was like, yeah. He jumped on a plane and we drove across country with my stuff in a van.
Uh-huh.
And the funny thing was, Keenan had another agenda, too. He wanted to stop in these little towns where girls he went to college with were living. And so what turned into a four-day trip turned into 6 weeks. No, I'm not joking, but he was, like, stopping it. Like, yeah, we got to turn over here. I was like, what? This ain't on the map. And, you know, back then you had a Thomas guide or so. Mm-hmm. But when I got to L.A., my break came, my first break.
Mm-hmm.
I was cast in a movie called A Soldier Story. And that was Denzel, that was David Alan Grier, that was Howard Rollins, and that was the late, great Adolf Caesar. The film got nominated for 4 Academy Awards, Best Picture, and that changed my life. I was like, oh, now this is the game. This is the game.
Wow. So going forward from that, then what was the next thing you did? Where, and also, I want to ask you, there was a landscape for actors of color when you were younger and the landscape now. Talk about what it was like when you were younger.
Well, let me say this. As a younger actor, like now you see black people as doctors and lawyers and police chiefs and all of that. Back
yeah.
then, it was really, you know, you were the, like all the names of the characters were always, you know, like it was like ghetto characters. Like his name was, his Boot, Licorice,
yeah.
Black.
Huggy Bear.
You know, it was all those stereotypical names.
Mm-hmm.
And you were either a drug dealer, you were either
a
gang member, of course, you were a rapist.
Pimp.
You were, you know, so it was all the negative stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that was the abundance of roles we were auditioning for. And now it's a difference. You can see people of color in different walks of life doing different kinds of occupations.
Okay. But when you were first getting in, one of the things that I was reading about you was, like, you could see that the number of opportunities available to you, there weren't that many. So you decided, I'm just going to make my own. So talk a little bit about that.
Well, I talk about this in the show at the Marsh.
Mm-hmm.
I had a one really horrible audition where the guy, this director, demeaned me and just, you know, he just, you know, can you look like this? Can you move like this? Can you stick your butt out? Can you do it? I was doing it. And then after the audition, I just felt so bad.
Right.
And I went to Keenan's house, and Keenan, you know, he's got 10 brothers and sisters, so he would cook. You know, we would put our money together, and he would cook. And so he was there cooking, and then he saw the look on my face.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the day I said, we got to make our own movies. And Keenan was like, Rob, you didn't go to film school. You never directed a short. And I was like, if we don't do this, we're going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when I took my career in my hands, and I said, you know what? I am going to make my own movie. And, you know, what people don't know, in 1984, the idea of somebody writing, directing, producing, and starring in a movie was going against like a billion voices that said, you know, you can't do that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was hard-headed. I was like, I can do it. I can figure it out. And I figured it out. We shot Hollywood Shuffle in 12 days.
Wow.
Over 2.5 years, because I kept running out of money.
Okay.
And the film became a huge hit. You know, it made close to, you know, with all the DVDs and everything, $8 million. And it cost $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a good day. We won.
Yeah.
We won. And that film, you know, and I talk about it in the show, you know, because so many people get frustrated and they go, there's nothing I can do. And then if you believe in yourself, you can do anything. And so that's mm-hmm. how I, you know, that's my playbook for life. There's always another way. There's always another way. And so, you know, in my show, you know, it's really about inspiration for a whole, you know, audience. You know, Living the Shuffle, you know, I have to say this because sometimes people go, oh, you were born with somebody, you know, it's all who you know in show business and
mm-hmm.
da da da.
Mm-hmm.
And no, it's like if you believe and you work hard and you surround yourself with the right people, you will win. What happens a lot of times is that people surround themselves with negative people.
Mm-hmm.
They could be married to a negative person. It could be their cousins, their father, their daddy. And, you know, some people waste time, you know, arguing and fighting. And to me, if you really want to work or live your dreams, I'm a living example that, you know, I'm just a kid from the hood that figured it out. I continue to work hard, you know, and when you work hard, things pay off.
Now, you've been talking about this show and teasing our audience. So you've got a show coming up at the Marsh. Want to talk about it?
Yes. The show is called Living the Shuffle. It is a 90-minute show without intermission, and it's me talking about my life in show business. It is an inspirational journey because there's so many things that went wrong that could have really went wrong, but they went right. And I've been, you know, writing, directing movies and television shows for
mm-hmm.
40 years now. I was Beyonce's first director.
Mm.
I directed her in Carmen, the
Hip Hopera. Yeah.
MTV.
Yeah, I have the CD.
Yeah, thank you. You know, so I, you know, and I've pretty much, you know, I've worked with Denzel. We did The Mighty Quinn. We did A Soldier Story. Directed Eddie Murphy Raw.
Mm-hmm.
And so in my one-man show, I talk about the experiences I had with the different people and how show business is the same and how it changed.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really, you know, and I do characters, you know, like I said, when I was TV Guide, I could do close to 25 to 30 voices. So, you know, if it was, you know, being an old man, then I would be an old man talking to you on this here radio. And I could just go into characters. So I do a lot of characters. I'll be at the Marsh January and February on the weekends.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, it's just a wonderful, I love what I do. I've been directing a lot lately. So 50 Cent has a show called Force from the Power Universe. I just directed the one of the episodes and then the season finale. Papa's House directing the season finale. Just finished a new screenplay. So I love staying busy. But the one-man show, Living the Shuffle, is my personal journey. It's like, because sometimes people go like, well, Robert Townsend, how did you make it? How did you get to do, how do you do what you do? And you know, sometimes I think part of the journey of life is giving back.
Uh-huh.
So people that have come to the show, they leave energized, and if they're an artist, they leave motivated, because then they go like, I can do it. I want to do it. You know, so for me, the show, it's me on a high wire. It's a high wire act. It's me telling these stories that you won't believe. You know, there's a story the day I almost got murdered, you know, and I break down what happened and how the twist and turns. And it's all true. My son was asking me the other day, he's like, Dad, you know, like, is it a lot to do this? And I was like, no. It's like all the stories are true. So the stories, I mean, there's a story that I have with Frank Sinatra, and it's all true. You know, Frank Sinatra loved my movie, The Five Heartbeats, and he invites me to his 77th birthday in Vegas. And me and my wife at the time, we go. And then what happens at the show, you won't believe. You know, it's just like, oh, my God, I'm sitting here, and this is happening with Frank Sinatra and Don Rickles, and so it's like it's all true.
Wow.
So there's so many stories that you go like, oh, wow, you really did that, you know? And I think part of sharing this is to hopefully inspire a new generation of artists to continue believing and continuing to go after their craft. Mm-hmm. So for me, you know, I'm just having fun, and I want people to come to, it's the Marsh in Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
There's shows on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I start this week, as a matter, next week. Yeah, this week. So I'm there starting on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then I'm there every weekend, and then I'm there in February. Wow. So I just want, you know, people, if you want to have a good time, you want to have, you know, like some of the critics, you know, have reviewed it, you know, like the first time I was at the Marsh, and, you know, I got some really amazing reviews, and it just, I was like, oh, my God, you know, they were like, it's a master class in storytelling. I was like, oh, okay, I'll take that. So it's just, I want to leave it all on the stage. As artists, that's what we're here for,
mm-hmm.
you know, to really give and give and give. And the lessons I've learned in this business, I just want to share. And the one-man show will make you laugh. It'll make you cry. But I really believe that those that come will leave out inspired.
Excellent. So one more time for our listening audience, when and where?
It's my one-man show. It's called Living the Shuffle. It's at the Marsh in Berkeley. And I'm there January and February, Friday through Saturday. And you can get your tickets at themarsh.org.
All right. Well, Robert Townsend, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. And because I have the CD right in front of me, which is your favorite hip-hopera song that doesn't have swearing?
Where the Brother by My Side At. My kids are on set. Beyonce was teaching my kids how to dance. And Sky, my youngest daughter, she started doing impersonations of Beyonce. And then she was on Vine and Instagram. And she got close to 10 million hits when she was a kid
uh-huh.
doing Beyonce. So yeah, that was a staple in the house.
And no, which one is that? Because that's not what it's called. Because we've got Cards Never Lie. And Booty, you know, like that's not actually on the soundtrack.
Oh, no. Oh, well, that was the song that was in it. The Cards Never Lie. Oh, I love that song, too, because, well, it's so, yeah, the Cards Never Lie, because we just had so many stars. Bow Wow was on it. Mos Def. Yeah, we had Raw Digga, everybody. But yeah, it's a lot of great songs. So I can't, off the top of my head, that is one that I love.
Okay. Well, then, once again, thank you, Robert Townsend, for being on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me, and I appreciate you taking time to talk with me.
Oh, no problem. People of Earth, check out Living the Shuffle at the Marsh in Berkeley. And let's check out Ms. Beyoncé Knowles, Wyclef Jean, and Rodea, and Cards Never Lie.
Mm-hmm. get it, wasting time with healing. I need to live my life because my time is unforgiving. I can't understand how my life changed around. Manifest my destiny, is it the brown underground? Blue skies are turning gray, it's the point of indecision. Believing in the culture must respect every vision.
Girlfriend, get your mind online. Don't spend your time, cause you can't waste your time. Every day like it's your last, but you must fear divine. Intervention comes to snatch up all your dreams from behind. Love, you feel it, then you got to let them know it. Love, your heart, and that's the feeling that you go with. If you have a dream, you need to go and let them know it. Cause you can wake up in the morning and it could be over.
No, 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 no. I don't want
go.
Just let me stay home.
No.
Let me dream, let me see another dawn.
No.
No, 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 no,
no.
I don't wanna go.
Go.
Just let me stay home. No. Let me dream, let me see another dawn.
Carmen, don't listen, cause the cards have deceit. Just slide him the money, we don't need a receipt. Truth only exists within the eyes of the beholder. Plus he's kinda young for fortune telling, probably should be older.
But the cards never lie. I thought I told you, now it's her time to try to reach her goals before she reaches
just
the sky.
Just for love, it's like I'm trying to throw my life away. Sometimes love is all you got, and other times it makes you pay.
But when you finally rise, then you realize
the windows to the soul and not the hips, but the eyes.
Oh, you could wish on the stars, but they're dead, just a lie.
But they shine just as bright as they did the entire life. No, 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 I don't wanna go. Just let me stay home. Just let me live my dreams and let me see another dawn. No, 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 I don't wanna go. Just let me stay home. Just let me live my dream and let me see another dawn.
You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. Heard Beyonce Knowles doing Cards Never Lie from the Carmen Hip Opera. And that was Sugar Pie DeSanto and Open Your Heart from Go-Go Power, the complete singles. And She joined her ancestors just recently, and here to talk about, like, the family has circled the wagons, and is here to talk about what sugar pie meant to them. I'd like to welcome Domingo and Lorraine Ballantyne. Welcome.
It's Domingo.
Domingo.
Ballantyne.
Ballantyne. Domingo Ballantyne and Lorraine Ballantyne. I'd like to welcome both of you. So I wanted let's first talk about when did your family, like, it seems like you're a musical family.
Yes.
So when did you guys start making music, and then when did you guys sort of split off into your own musical realms?
Well, I'm the youngest out of the 11, so they started way before I was even born.
Uh-huh.
So my mother played keyboard.
Okay.
And this is how our family got into the musical scene.
Okay.
And then, of course, Sugar Pie, which my mother had trained in singing and everything, and her playing keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
This is how we got into this music scene. But basically, all of my brothers and them, they all sang just harmony and, you know, like the Jacksons,
mm-hmm.
but way back in the 40s.
But Mario went to Juilliard.
And then my other brother, Mario, went to Juilliard, and he was a jazz singer, and he hung around with Johnny Mathis and people like that. And we went to school. My sisters went to school with Johnny Mathis at Washington High School. But he wasn't even singing yet.
Mm-hmm.
But our family was in the music business already. Not in the business, but singing and talent shows.
And don't forget James Etta.
And, of course, Etta lived with us for a long time, Etta James.
That's right.
And that's how Sugar Pie and them became to be the Peachers before, way before Johnny Otis discovered my sister. My sister had a group called the Peaches. My sister Francesca Palaya, which is Sugar Pie, and of course James Etta, which is Etta James.
Okay,
and they sang for a good while.
So when you came, when you popped onto the scene, like, there was a whole musical machine already existing when you were
born. Yeah, when I came out, I started playing parochial school, grammar school.
Catholic.
I started playing in the band at Benjamin Franklin. And then from then, my life and my musical career blossomed from that.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, my sister helped me to get there. She helped me to get there. And if it wasn't for her, I wouldn't be where I am. You know, she gave me that time.
He played with Pie a lot.
A lot.
She called, he was the baby boy of blues, and he would eat the bass and stuff and have posters with Pie, and she called him her baby boy, and he's on the poster with her, and he played with her in Stockton and all kind of places, because they were all over the place.
I played with that as a young boy. And then, of course, I went to a group called the LBJs, Latin Blues and Jazz, because actually I started playing upright Latin music before I transferred to blues, but my sister was already singing blues. So Michael Mathis, Johnny Mathis' brother, and I'm going to make this short, knew about me, that I played bass. So he got drafted, and I went into the LBJ's Latin Blues and Band, Latin Blues and Jazz Band. And then, of course, my sister helped us to, you know, get started in the city.
So what was your first big break? What was her first big break that, you know?
Well,
that
my first big break was with the LBJs, Latin Blues and Jazz.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went with a group called the Extension 5 with Jeannie Tracy. And then I went to Lydia Pence and Cold Blood.
Mm-hmm.
I did an album with them. Then, of course, who else did I
You play? Missed one thing. He was with the Whispers when he was with LBJs.
My first job,
I
played with a group called the Ballads in Oakland, California. That was the first time I actually started playing rhythm and blues because of their singing group. And I was in the LBJs, and they hired our whole group. Then I left the ballads, then I went to the whispers in the 60s, in the early 60s. Actually, I believe the LBJs was the first band that actually played with the whispers here in Oakland, California, and San Francisco.
Okay.
So I know them all.
Okay.
You know.
So of the 11 brothers and sisters in the family, how many of them continued on with music besides you and Sugar Pie?
They all did.
Oh, really?
They never, you know, some people just play at home and treat themselves to their own music.
Well, how about professionally, though? Like, who's just stayed in the band?
No, my brother played congas with a few Latin bands, but he never really flourished like mm-hmm. Sugar Pie and myself.
When Mario went to France, remember?
Oh, then Mario, he went to France, but he was a full, one of my older brothers was a full jazz singer.
Okay.
Sang at Bop City and the Coffee Dons and all of the great jazz clubs in the 50s.
And then how did you and Lorraine meet?
Well, let me tell you about that
story. Oh, don't tell that story now. Don't do that.
Do you really want me to tell you?
I do, especially okay. because you don't want to.
I was playing with Bobby Freeman
uh-huh.
down in North Beach. This was years ago.
Okay.
And Bobby Freeman, if no one knows, he made a song called The Swim. Bobby, let the come on and do the swim.
Mm-hmm.
So she saw me one day down at the Dragon or Go-Go
mm-hmm.
with the Whispers.
Mm-hmm.
And she told her friend, you know, you see that man? She told her best friend, that's going to be my husband. I didn't even know this woman.
I love stories like, no, I do,
yeah,
because
no,
some people.
No, it really happened.
Yeah.
So later on,
uh-huh.
I was with, I was with the Extension 5, and she ran into me again over in Oakland.
Uh-huh.
And she introduced herself to me. And she told me who she was.
Did she tell you you were
and
her future husband?
She was so young looking, and I was so hip
uh-huh.
and cool. I asked, I said, well, let me see your ID.
Uh-huh.
Let me see your ID. Because I didn't think she was 18.
Ah. You know, really.
That's how long we've hung around with each other. We've
excellent,
been together
excellent.
A long time. You can tell the story.
I'm making it short because I don't want him to get into what he tells everybody else. But at any rate, he found out, and then we dated, and then that's how it started from there. That's
and
good
she
enough.
She told me, because I'm from the Fillmore. Can I tell the story? Now let it go. This is important.
I wanted to cut it.
She told me when I asked her, well, where did you live?
Uh-huh.
She says, well, I live in San Francisco. I said, well, so do I. She said, well, what part do you live in? I said, well, I live in the Fillmore, which I did. And she said, well, I live, oh, Jesus Christ. She said, I live in Silver Terrace. I've never even heard of Silver Terrace in my life.
Uh-huh.
And I'm from here, born and raised.
So are you trying to, like, fake it like you knew?
Well, no. So I told my drummer, I said, man, I called me a rich one. He said, what do you mean? He said he was Harvey Hughes. He played with me in The Cold Blood.
Uh-huh.
He said, I said, man, she lives in Silver Terrace. He said, where? I said, in San Francisco. Because I knew there was a lot of rich places, but I've uh-huh. never been to Silver Terrace. Come to find out that Neil on his point.
Silver Terrace is by Silver. He just would not. And I told him, that's what the deed of trust says. And he just, no, everything, anything that was by close to 3rd Street or Bayshore, he calls it Hunter's Point.
We
and
all
I, said, and
it.
I
yeah,
had to
yeah,
explain
yeah.
to him,
we all called
my parents own their house. We did not live on top of the hill.
No,
and anybody that lived in Bayview or Silver Terrace will get angry with you when you put them on top of the hill.
Got
parents
it.
Worked hard for them houses.
I understand.
And I
where
was uppity.
Where
I was, like, when I was a kid, we lived in the Haight. Yeah.
It's part of the upper.
Well,
upper or lower.
I remember, like, we could walk to Golden Gate Park.
Oh, she was
on
the upper part. Yeah.
But we're not here to talk about me. We're here to talk about Sugar Pie.
Okay.
And what she meant to you. So,
excuse me.
Tell us a little bit about Sugar.
Go ahead.
She was spicy, full of the word my parents used was piss and vinegar.
Mm-hmm.
And she could go off, just like, I mean, when I say like her presence, when she walked in, you knew she was there. Mm-hmm. I don't care who it was, the band members, everything. From the time she started, the first big one she did was over in England when she went over with the blues guys. Mm-hmm. She was the only woman there with them. And she did her Rock Me Baby and something else, and she tore the house down, all 4 feet 11 of her. And she, when she went to the Apollo, then mm-hmm. she wound up going to on the road with James Brown. She was with him, I hear, 2 years, but it was 5 years she was on the road with him. And he used to get angry at her and told her to not do so much because he'd have to work harder. When she, after she would go, she would do flips, jump on people, everything.
Oh, wow.
And James Brown told her to stop because she was getting on his nerves. He'd have to work harder when she had to come behind her.
And they ended up being friends. Mm-hmm. They were great friends. And
yeah, and then she went with Chess Records, her and Etta, and they stayed there. And then as it went on, she wound up writing for Chess more than performing. Mm-hmm. But she did get to do I Want to Know and Slippin' Mules with them. But then her writing was so good, he kept her there. And he pushed his money behind Etta, and not because she was writing all the songs. Mm-hmm. We're making money with that. And, of course, needless to say, they robbed her. And then when we started finding out, turned out they said, oh, we thought she was dead.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Please,
yeah.
Don't bring that up.
Yeah, but they, you know, she finally, because she wrote like hundreds of songs, and people have no idea, from Minnie Riperton on down, people have no clue how many songs she wrote.
Well, we just have a couple of minutes left, so let's. I just want to ask about if there is one thing you wanted the our listening audience to know about Sugar Pie, what would that be?
You want me to say it?
Yeah.
She was tough.
Yeah, she really was, because she had to be. To be in that music business, being half black and half Filipino, the way she looked was always an issue for everybody. I'm not going to just say anybody, everybody.
Sure.
But she proved that she could stay with all of them from the way she sang and the way she had to act, because she had to be tough in order to survive with all everybody, the black musicians, the white ones. They all had a thing, but she proved she could do it, and she was just as tough as everybody else. So that's what she became, a tough little feisty woman.
Yep.
That's her legacy.
Mm-hmm.
That's her all legacy. Right.
So if people wanted to give their respect to Sugar Pie DeSanto, what would you ask them to do?
Just say that you understand the times that she came up. And they were quite different from the times that they are now. She opened the doors for a lot of people of different color and mixtures. She had no problem with that. But when you have a name like Umpalaya, you have to change your name. Nobody would come out and see her. That's why he changed her name to Sugar Pie DeSanto. But she was a proud Filipino African-American woman.
Well, with that, I want to thank you both, Domingo and Lorraine, for being on the show. Thanks for bringing the youngins who look really...
Quincy Kai.
That's Quincy Kai, my grandson.
And this is Charlie.
That's Charles.
Charlie. Right.
My granddaughter.
Well, I want to thank you both so much for being on the show and for talking about, you know, the times and Sugar Pie.
Thank you so much for having us. We appreciate it.
No problem.
Okay, people of Earth, let's listen to some more Sugar Pie. And in just a moment, we're going to be speaking with Janine from the San Francisco Public Library.
Some confusion. Here they come down the street.
You're listening to 89.5 FM, KPOO, San Francisco. It's the last Monday of the year, but it wouldn't be a great Monday without our librarianista here to tell you that the new year's got tons of books and stuff in store for you. I'd like to welcome one of my favorite librarianistas, Janine Moghanim. Hello.
Hi, Marilyn. How are you?
I'm fine. So what's going on with you at the library?
Oh, so much. Well, we're winding down the year, of course, the last couple days, but we've got plenty in store for the new year. I'm at the Western Edition branch, which is just a couple blocks away from KPOO Studios. So I would love to tell you more about what we've got going on at our branch early in the new year.
Do tell.
All right. So there's so much going on. If you like performances, we've got on Saturday, January 11th at 2 p.m., there's going to be a Japanese koto performance.
What's koto?
The koto is an instrument that is also known as a Japanese zither. And Kazuma Ishikawa will be performing both traditional and contemporary Japanese pieces in this performance. Joined by Haruka Shimizu.
Wow.
And it's going to be a great way to learn more about the instrument and to just hear some beautiful and calming music and celebrate Japanese culture at the library.
And do you need to sign up in advance for that, or can you just show up?
Oh, no, you could just show up.
Okay. And when is that again?
That is Koto, Japanese music. On Saturday, January 11th at 2 p.m. at the Western Edition branch.
Okay. And then what else you got going? Because I know you guys have a lot.
We have a lot more. So many of our branches are going to be hosting lion dance performances for Lunar New Year.
Did you say Edition. Lion dance?
Oh, yes. So it's a Lunar New Year. It's a Chinese tradition of the lion dance, sort of ring in the new year and chase away the bad spirits.
Okay.
And bring luck. So many of our branches will be hosting lion dancing on three consecutive Saturdays, January 11th, January 18th, and January 25th. So at Western Edition, we're going to be hosting the Jingmo Athletic Association lion dance on Saturday, January 18th at 12:30 p.m.
Okay, okay. And is that something that you have to sign up for, or do you just show up?
No, yeah, just show up. Pretty much all of our performances, you just show up.
Okay.
And, yeah, find a spot and enjoy.
Very cool, very cool. All right, so what else you got?
All right, yeah, I keep going. Another thing we love to celebrate at the library is More Than a Month, our celebration of Black history, culture, and heritage. And at the library, we started around January 15th, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday. And so at Western Edition Branch, we're going to be celebrating in a few different ways. Let's see. So let's start with another performance. On February 15th, that's another Saturday, at 3 p.m., we're going to be hosting Fauna Solomon. She's a steel pan performer, very talented musician, who also teaches the audience more about steel pan, which is an instrument also often called the steel drum. It's native to the Caribbean area, the tropical West Indies, and it's a tool of resistance and cultural pride historically. So Fauna is going to both teach us about the steel pan and also perform for us.
Okay. Go on.
All right. I will. We've started sort of ramping up our programming for adults as well. All the programs I just mentioned are for all ages. A new series that we've got going on for adults is called Story Time for Grown-Ups.
Ooh, what's
and
that?
It's basically what it sounds like. It's a story time, but instead of for little ones, it's for grown-ups. And so one of our librarians reads short stories
Oh, nice.
For a grown-up audience. And sometimes there's a little bit of discussion as well.
And
so the next one will be on Saturday, January 18th at 4 p.m. And again, you don't have to sign up. You can just drop by and listen to some.
And how long is that? How long has that program been going on?
It's pretty new. It's only been going on for about since this past month, I believe. December was the first one. December. So very new, but so far we're off to a good start.
Very cool. I like that idea because, it's nice to have people read to you. It really is, no matter how old you are.
Exactly. And I know that like many people are into audiobooks these days.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a live, a live version.
Yeah.
And you get to have a conversation too.
So what's your, of the events that are coming up that you haven't mentioned yet, what's one that you're really looking forward to?
One that I'm really looking forward to that I haven't mentioned yet
mm-hmm.
is, I'm going to be hosting a program that is both Black History Month and STEM related. STEM meaning science, technology, engineering, and math for little ones. It is called Mae Jemison Rockets. So we're going to hear a book and learn about the life of Dr. Mae Jemison, the first African-American woman to travel in space. And then we're going to make rockets powered by our breath using straws so we can fly just like Dr. Jemison.
Well, very cool. When is that?
Yes. And that's going to be on Friday, February 21st at 4 p.m. Again, at Western Edition Branch. And no sign-ups are required. Just drop on by. And that one is for children and their families.
Very cool. Very cool indeed.
Yeah.
So what other events do you have for grown-ups who are children at heart?
For grown-ups who are children at heart, we are also offering a program series called Artful Afternoon.
Uh-huh.
Artful Afternoon is a once-monthly Saturday series. It's been going on for a couple months. And the next one will be Saturday, February 8th at 3 p.m. And it's going to be Black History Month themed as well. So there's kind of like a different theme each month, and all the materials are provided. We provide refreshments as well, and it's just kind of a nice afternoon of creativity without, you know, too much instruction or too many rules, just like open creativity and a way to, you know, socialize with your fellow neighbors and community members as well.
Very nice. When is that again?
That's Saturday, February 8th at 3 p.m.
February?
And that's, yes, February 8th.
Okay.
And that's going to be a monthly series as well.
Now, for our listening audience, I personally know that there's lots of stuff that's happening at the library. But for our listeners, where can they go to find out all of the things that are happening?
Oh, yeah. Well, there are several options. You can, of course, always stop by any of our library branches and the main library and chat with a friendly staff member. You can also pick up an at-the-library newsletter, which reports on all of our events happening at the library each month.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful, full-color newsletter that talks about some highlights for the coming month.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also go to sfpl.org, like San Francisco Public Library, .org, and we have an online events calendar as well. You can also sign up through the website to, you know, receive the calendar of events in your email, and each branch also has their own monthly newsletters as well.
Very good. And since we only have like a minute left, is there one event that's coming up that you want to make sure that people know about?
Yeah, actually. And this one is not at Western Edition Branch. This will be at the main library, but I think it's very much worth highlighting.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be inaugurating a new poet laureate of San Francisco.
Mm.
Her name is Jenny Lim.
Okay.
And her inauguration will take place at the main library's Corrett Auditorium on February 2nd at 3 p.m.
Okay.
And Jenny Lim is the first Chinese-American poet appointed to be the city's poet laureate. So it'll be a very exciting and wonderful celebration.
Excellent, excellent. Well, Janine Moganum, I don't think our listening audience really understands how amazing you are. Every month, Janine is the person that makes sure that I have a librarianista to talk about what's going on at the library. Everyone knows that I love the library, and Janine's been for years now. She carried the torch that... that was laid down many, many years ago with a really good friend who works at the library. And Janine has just been amazing in providing people. So I just want to make sure that you get the credit that you are due, because I know that it's yet another duty that you have to do, and you do it with such grace and openness. And I really appreciate all that you do for the radio station.
Well, thank you so much. I love KPOO, so it's a total pleasure, and I love working with you, Marilyn.
Thank you. All right, well, Janine Moganum, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. And the Western Edition branch of the library is the KPOO library. It's the one that's closest to us, so I get to see her from time to time. But I want to thank you all and thank all the librarians for all the hard work and all the amazing things that you guys do.
Thank you so much.
All right. Okay, people of Earth, it's just about time for me to turn the mic over to Mr. Ford, who'll be pleasuring your ear hole, so I'm going to leave you right now. This is J.J. Barnes and Humdinger. Until next month, my friends, ta-ta and toodly-doo.